So I'm standing on Great Queen Street, just a few metres off Covent Garden, in front of a building that I've probably walked past hundreds of times by now, but never quite recognised that it was there. Like, I never looked up, clearly, because it's huge. It's really, really tall. It has these kind of church, temple-like vibes to it. But the reason I'm here today and why I pay a bit more attention is because there's an event called Discover Freemasonry, where people who are interested to become a Mason or just interested in Masonry in general can go into the hall and have a bit of an impression of what they're up to. And what I really didn't expect is so many people being here. There's a massive queue that's going almost around the whole building, and everybody's in suits and very formal wear, so I'm a bit embarrassed because I'm just wearing jeans and t-shirt, so I'm quite underdressed, to put it lightly. This was me at Freemasons Hall in London on the 10th of May 2025. The only time I ever came across Freemasonry before was through Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol and a failed Tinder date with a guy who was too deep into conspiracy theories. So how did I get here? Instagram. I was scrolling through my perfectly tailored Instagram feed of fashion bloggers, recipes and fitness exercises when suddenly...
I'm a Freemason, of course I take my regalia case everywhere I go.
I'm a Freemason, of course I make subtle references to the ritual during my daily conversation. It is found.
And I just thought, are you not meant to be secret or something? My name is Amelie Eberle, and today I'm looking into the world of Freemasonry, one of the oldest fraternal organisations. I will speak to academics, male and female Masons, and prospective candidates, and I want to figure out, why on earth would you, as a young man, want to become a Mason in 2025? Frankly, my knowledge was quite limited. I had no idea about the Masons, the charity work they do, or what they are even about. So I started reading, and reading, and reading, and felt like I was fighting a hydra. For every question I seemed to answer, two new ones came up. My biggest help to get some sort of understanding about Freemasonry was John Dickey's book, The Craft. So who better to ask my questions to than the man himself? I meet John Dickey in his office at UCL, where he's a professor for Italian studies. His office is exactly what you imagine a professor's office to look like, rammed to the rim with books and knowledge.
Hi, my name's John Dickey. I'm a professor of Italian studies at University College London, and I'm the author of The Craft, How the Freemasons Made the Modern World.
There are many different origin stories when it comes to Freemasonry, but there are really two key moments in its emergence.
First in Scotland, and it isn't to do with ordinary, humble stonemasons. It's to do with guys who, at the court, the Scottish court, would be, yes, the guys building important buildings, but these were architects, you know, they weren't guys sort of, you know, with an apron hacking away at the stone. And they made and they had their own mythology, if you like, which took them back, sought their origins in some of the pillars of medieval philosophy, in the men who built the Temple of Solomon, in Greek philosophy. It was a kind of mixed bag of mythologies, and that became married at the Scottish court to a sort of what was called of the art of memory. You may have heard of this. The great Roman orators, Cicero, used to remember speeches, great long legal speeches, by imagining walking into a building. Yeah, you imagine walking into a building, and in a building, each room in the building is a chapter of your speech. Each element in the building, there's a column, there's a sofa, there's a picture, there's a mosaic, is a theme that you need to cover. And then you go on to the next room and so on, so that you remember your talk. This is the art of memory. And in the Renaissance, when the Freemasonry emerged, This was thought to have almost magical powers. God had put secrets into the universe for us to remember, to unlock the secrets of the universe. And when that those two things met, the mythology of these architect stroke stonemasons and this medieval this Renaissance philosophy called Hermeticism, what you get is Freemasonry. That's what Freemasons do. They go into these symbolic rooms with, you know, checkered floors and columns and globes and candles and other symbols for them to remember, and they act out rituals that have a spiritual meaning, that have the open bigger doors and so on. That's where Freemasonry first emerges.
So far we have a lot of architects doing an awful lot of rituals. However, according to Professor John Dickey, once early Freemasonry crosses the border, things really start to happen.
The second key moment is when it reaches London, and in the early 18th century, they draw up a rule book, the Constitutions of the Freemasons. And that rule book really is Freemasonry's passport to the world. From London, Freemasonry very quickly spreads around the empire and beyond. You know, within 15, 20 years, it's in the Americas, it's right across Europe, it's in India, it's in the Middle East. It just was an idea that had found its moment and suddenly spread contagiously across the world.
How would they describe themselves, you think, today? Like organisation, charity? I think there's quite a lot of words. Fraternity.
Their slogan that you often use on secrecy is not particularly convincing. Rather than say, well, we're not a secret society, we're a society with secrets, which of course to anybody who's prepared, you know, starts off being suspicious of them is hardly very reassuring. No, they're a brotherhood based on moral improvement, which as its centre, sort of dramatic enactments of moral principles in the form of ceremonies.
Freemasonry has attracted an awful lot of suspicion throughout history. Franco, Hitler, Mussolini all banned the fraternity, and it is still banned in many countries today. I knew that there was always a lot of murmuring about the Masons, but I never quite understood why the same didn't apply to other charitable organisations or more exclusive clubs.
It's the secrecy. Masonic secrecy is a really fascinating thing, but one inevitable consequence of it, one I think Freemasons are a bit disingenuous to claim is not their fault. I think one inevitable consequence of it is it attracts both interest and suspicion, mistrust. And from that point of view, it has a very useful function for the Freemasons. In as much as it attracts curiosity, it attracts potential members, and in as much as it attracts suspicion and even hostility, then it's a great way of drawing a boundary between them and the outside world. You know, we know who we are, we're good guys, the rest of the world just misunderstands us, but that's who we are. It's a sort of team building, us versus them way of building a collective identity.
Being at the event at Freemasons Hall gave me that impression as well. When I talked to some of the young men about their reasons for potentially joining the Masons, they often mentioned a curiosity and interest regarding the secrets. And I kind of get it. You just want to know. You want to be in on it.
Now, there's much more to Masonic secrecy that I can go into. Put very briefly, when you become a Freemason, you swear terrifying oaths to protect the secrets of Freemasonry, that all of that takes place in a secret ceremony closed off from the outside world. So secrecy is built into your initiation at every level. But when you strip all the ritual and the symbol, the secrets are hidden behind symbols and so on, strip all of those layers of protection around the secrets away, and what you find are the actual secrets are so banal they make your arms fall off, as they say in Italian. Okay? In other words...
The secrets aren't all that deep. And frankly, they're not more than a few Google searches away. So what makes people stay once they found out about them? I'm now at the point where I need to speak to a young Mason in order to find out anything.
There's no kind of like, oh, you know, what about this? What about that? It's he just genuinely said to me, I think I've got something that's going to help with that. I am Alex. I am 30 years old. Yeah, 30 years old. That took quite a long time to think of. 30 years old. I am a Freemason. I have been a Freemason for just short of 2 years, actually. Yeah. My job, software engineer, and I'm incredibly, incredibly passionate about Freemasonry.
Can you tell me a bit, like, you joined 2 years ago, but maybe the year, let's say, prior to joining, or the time prior to joining, what did your life look like? Were you already working as a software engineer? Were you already married? Kind of, what can I imagine your life like?
Sure.
Shortly before joining.
So I joined Freemasonry 10 days before I got married.
Oh, wow, and that's two big life events for you.
Yeah,
quite a condensed time,
really,
then.
Really big events. So my life was looking pretty good. The thing that I want to kind of go at here is I don't want to kind of say, look, Freemasonry has made almost like kind of made me like this superhuman change of who I am today. I don't think that's good, but I was on a good path. You know, I'm working. I've been working at the same company for a long time. I've, you know, got a lovely wife. I've got a dog. Like, everything's looking really good. I guess I was probably in a place where I was trying to work out who I wanted to be, right? So it's not a midlife crisis because, well, hopefully not. hopefully not a midlife crisis, but when you hit that point where you're sort of going, okay, I've done a job for so long, I've done the job for this long, I'm working to pay my bills. I think you kind of get to a point where you're like, where else? What else? Like, what is there to life beyond just putting money into the bank and just kind of helping? There's more to life than money, right? And I had pretty much what I've just said. I kind of shared the same statement with a friend, right? So I've got a really, really good friend, a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person. And he...
Have you been friends for a long time?
No, and that's the amazing thing. Oh. That's the amazing thing. So we met when I moved to the area that I live in at the moment. We kind of met and we just clicked, right? So I'm at the pub a year and a half later, something like that, maybe.
After you met him?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I say to him, I'm just like, it's almost like Groundhog Day, right? Like, it's almost like Groundhog Day. And I just said to him, I was like, I just wish there was something, I could do something more. Like, there's something else. You know, I miss doing something a bit, you know, a bit more than what I'm doing right now. And there's no kind of like, oh, you know, what about this? What about that? He just genuinely said to me, I think I've got something that's going to help with that. And I remember him saying what it was and pretty much what your, you know, which most people's thoughts are. It's like, what is that? You know, like, whoa. And I think at the time I kind of looked at that and went, oh, that sounds fun. Like, in a kind of like, in a way that most people that are inquisitive would find it. So rather than saying, oh, I wonder what that is, I wonder what it could do for me, I'm very much like, oh, Freemasons, that sounds fun. You know, like, don't know what it is, but I don't know, like, let's give it a go.
I wanted to tell you this last time that we spoke, but I was so surprised because we initially were in touch over email, right? And then we changed to WhatsApp. And I was so surprised when I saw your profile picture because you looked so normal. Like,
what are you trying to say?
Not in a negative sense, but I don't know what I was expecting. I thought of somebody super formal looking.
Right.
Because I think the Masons have this image in the outside world of kind of old mm-hmm. white men, right? So I thought, you know, these guys that are kind of behaving like that and kind of look like that and kind of dress like that. Maybe that's what I had in my mind. So when I saw your picture, I was like, what do you mean?
You can imagine Alex with a warm and open face, friendly, slightly curly hair, casual, wearing a white t-shirt with a cool print on it and a pair of jeans. Alex cycled here, so no pinstripe suit and square Masonic suitcase in sight.
What do you enjoy the most about it? What do you get out of it? I mean, that sounds so transactional, like what do you get out of it? But you know, I mean, how does it benefit your life, you feel? Or which parts do you really like?
I could talk for hours about this, right? So I'm trying to think how I can condense it. You know, so like one of my favorite things is seeing lots of different people, lots of different backgrounds. This is, bet you've heard this one as well. We've got cab drivers, bus drivers. We've got, yeah, bet you've heard that one before because it's true, right? So there's such a variety of people. You meet people that are very different to you along the scale. You meet people who have different religious opinions, different political opinions. We have people that are vegetarians. You know what I mean? Like, I know I'm kind of saying that as a joke, but I'm saying the idea that like you put yourself in a place where you're with people that you probably wouldn't necessarily usually get to meet.
So you're not as much of in a bubble, maybe, that we often find ourselves in.
Yeah, it's not a bubble. It's definitely not a bubble. You know, and you get to. But you look at these people and you say, well, it doesn't matter because we all share this same, very much this same kind of approach to how we should look at our lives and how we should work our lives.
What else?
So, yeah, I think the dinings, I was sort of joking with food and sort of not, right? Like, I've definitely got bigger since joining. Like, 100% I've got bigger.
So
I'll always think before
a gain
talk.
Was weight in that case, you would say.
Yeah, big gain, right, big gain. That's an important part, but it's also just, like, I moved away from my family when I was 18. I got a job on the South Coast. I've not lived with my family for 12 years of my life. And Freemasonry kind of gives me, like, a group of people that have seen the world. And they've seen the world at different stages. So, you know, everyone's equal. Like, everyone I love to the same, you know, I love them in different ways and everything. But there's a lovely bloke in our lodge, and he's quite old, but he's got the most joyous smile, and he's always so happy to see me. And he treats me like his grandson. And he, you know, comes over, gives me a massive hug. How are you? What's been going on? Just really cares. And that's, to me, one of the biggest things as well is this, like, it's like a family. Like, it's honestly like a family.
When I saw the long queue in front of Freemasons Hall back in May, I thought why so many young men were interested in joining was obvious. Loneliness. With Gen Z and millennials often being called the lonely generations, that just made sense. An urge for some sense of community. In front of me, however, I now find men that aren't lonely at all, have plenty of friends and hobbies outside of Masonry, are open-minded, and were just looking for something else. Something that it seems almost impossible to pin down. Yes, maybe it points that is an urge for some deeper connection, but even that is pretty normal around people our age. Barely a chat with my friends goes by without someone longing for the intensity of a friendship you had, like, let's say, during your school days. Okay, so I feel a bit guilty now about how I pigeonhole people without even knowing them. And it doesn't get any better from here. As you might have noticed, I've been speaking mainly about men. Well, it's a boys' club, isn't it? So that, plus that there's plenty of reports and data about our current society creating a lost generation of young men, leads me to the conclusion that it is maybe that. An urge for a club where boys can still be boys. Well, not quite, because women can become Masons too.
So my name is Sharon. I'm Grand Lodge Officer for the Honourable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons. I run a university lodge in Staffordshire. I also look after a lodge in Coventry. We're opening a lodge in Oxford shortly for a university lodge for university students in Oxford. I look after a couple of overseas lodges. I'm kept quite busy. And I also, my mother lodge is here in Gibraltar.
Lodges are smaller organisations within Freemasonry, which operate under a governing body. For example, the United Grand Lodge of England, which Alex's lodge is part of, or the Honourable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons, which Sharon's lodge is part of. I found it helpful to think of lodges almost as branches. It is within your lodge that you perform your rituals, meet with each other, and do your Masonic work like charity together.
I, for example, up until I went to the Discover Freemasonry event, or shortly before when I started kind of doing my research, I wasn't aware that a woman could become a Mason. Is that quite common, that people are quite surprised about that, about females being able to be a Mason?
Yes, it is. And I think that's something that we're trying to change, currently trying to change. We can advertise, we can do Discover Freemasonry events the same as the men, and which is why we're invited to those quite a lot. And you'll see speakers from Women's Freemasonry regularly on stage talking about their journey. And at that point, you'll see still wives, even though their husbands are Freemasons, you'll see wives saying, oh, I didn't know you could join and I want to go and find out. So there's just so much work we need to get done to be able to be out there. But at the same time, your infrastructure has to grow with it. So, you know, there's no point in having 10,000 people suddenly join up and you're not ready for that because it's unfair for them because they won't get the same journey. So it has to evolve over time, really.
Besides the Honourable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons, there's also another female-only Grand Lodge, the Order of Women Freemasons. Both are separate to the United Grand Lodge of England, but they do work together for events and so on. Before Sharon and me speak, I wonder how it feels like to be part of a group that is quite segregated from the men. Is there a feeling of not being part of the real deal?
No, actually, it's quite the reverse, because we're really empowered. You'll see on some of our posters, friendship, inspiration and empowerment, because we're doing it for us. It doesn't really matter how many men are doing it or what they're doing. We're doing it for us, as long as we understand our regulations and ancient landmarks of the actual order, then everything else that we do is empowering more women to join the fraternity in order to better themselves. So it really doesn't feel like we're a minority part of anything. In fact, if you listen to some of the ladies, they'll say, well, we're better than the men anyway. We do it the right, men don't do it right. So, I mean, that's a fun joke that, you know, goes between both orders, really.
There's no mixed lodges, at least not under the United Grand Lodge, and for you guys neither. And you are not necessarily advocating for mixed lodges either,
no,
right?
No, we're not, because we're really happy that the lodges aren't mixed. And I wouldn't personally belong to an order that's mixed, because we can join forces, as it were, outside of the lodge and do charitable events together, have festive boards together. Although we don't really do that, it's called a white table or gentleman's evening. So there we come together, and we have various social events that we can do together, because husbands bring their wives, wives who are Freemasons bring their husbands, who may not be Freemasons. So that part of it is nice. It's a nice coming together. But when you work as a lodge, you do important work inside of your lodge, and you do important work in your own self-development. And that's important, that you feel safe in your environment, and women help each other feel safe in that environment. The same way that men are able to do their thing without women looking on, and they can be themselves.
The male Masons I spoke to about how a male-only space feels explained it to me quite similarly. So as long as both sides are happy with it, all good, I reckon. It is a segregated space, though, and that surely isn't for everyone. Having said this, Freemasonry is not segregated in every country and in every order, but in the UK it is very much the way. I thought about this an awful lot, considered how I feel or don't feel about it, whether I think it should be different or not. I thought back to my school years, having been in both mixed and girls-only schools, thought and chatted a lot with Masons and friends about it. Is this still timely? Then I find myself in all sorts of female-only spaces again, if only by accident rather than design. Pilates class, nail parlour, girls' group chat. Of course I can't completely discount the idea that especially male-only spaces might be problematic. But speaking just anecdotally, I didn't interview a bunch of sexists. My conclusion? I just don't know, and change my opinion by the second. At the Discover Freemasonry event, I met Nicholas, a 24-year-old software engineer living in Portsmouth. Nicholas and me started chatting during a tour of the building. He's one of these people that it is super easy to chat with. Open, engaging, and also really friendly and polite. A few moments in, and we're deep into my research project and Nicholas's family history with the Masons. His great-great-grandfather was a Mason, which made him curious about the whole thing. At the point of the event, he's even considering joining himself. So I want to know, how does a potential recruit feel about the whole segregation thing?
I mean, I would rather it was more mixed, just because that's one of the bits that probably does feel a bit more archaic. And I was talking yesterday with one of my friend's girlfriends on the beach, and she's quite against masonry. And I was asking, you know, what are the different things that sort of put you against it? And the thing that she said that I just couldn't really counter is she said, well, you know, it's segregated, and the fact that men and women aren't together, and that it was traditionally more men, there is that kind of sexist element to it. And obviously they are countering that now, and they're breaking molds and becoming more of a traditional, not less of a traditional, whatever it is, boys club. And I enjoy that aspect, but I think there is still that level of segregation, the way that there's only two female lodges in London, and there was like hundreds of male lodges.
Female Freemasonry is so rich in history and its own traditions that I'm definitely not doing it justice right now. I basically opened a whole can of worms here. But I do think that it is important to talk about, especially as these debates are on the forefront of a lot of young people's minds. I still haven't found out though why exactly young people would join. So off to the next attempt. When I started this project, I for sure thought that at least one of all these myths must be true. Freemasons are big on nepotism and back scratching. And in my defense, fraternal organizations often don't fall short when it comes to helping each other out. I thought being a Freemason must give you some sort of career elevation. Why else would you surround yourself as a young man with a lot of elderly stuck in a suit on an otherwise free sunny day? When I went to the Discover Freemason event, my apprehensions initially seemed confirmed. A few of the guys I spoke to who were interested in becoming a Mason did not have as noble intents as, for example, Nicholas. Some spoke quite open and bluntly about hoping to get some sort of networking opportunity out of this. And I would lie to say that a part of me didn't think, gotcha. Then there was, however, this talk, like an info talk, where Masons spoke about their experience, of what it is like to be a Freemason, the charitable work they do, and it became quite clear quite quickly that being a Freemason was quite a lot of work. The guys I spoke to earlier came out with an obvious disappointment on their face, and I challenged in my misconceptions. But can you get some sort of networking out of it? A little bit of help, at least. I put this to John Dickey. Historically, was the idea of networking and job opportunities part of the appeal of becoming a Mason? Or is that just one of those Freemason myths?
Yeah, I mean, that's undoubtedly true. Undoubtedly true. I mean, you're talking about the 18th century when people lived by creating networks up through society, lived from the patronage of the wealthy and so on. And some of the founders of contemporary Freemasons were part of that society and lived by networking, and Freemasonry was part of that. There's a kind of thrill, because formally all Freemasons are equal. They're all brothers on the square, as they say. So the Duke and the Dustman are equal. And there's a real thrill to that, particularly for the Dustman, I have to say. And, the Masons say that the reasons why they wear gloves in their ceremonies is to disguise the difference between the hands of the Dustman and the hands of the Duke, you know. So that said, there is undoubtedly, you know, networking. I don't think it's as easy to use Freemasonry for networking purposes as many, many people assume. Yeah, remember, Freemasonry is a structure where you join an individual lodge, so you will be seeing the same people all the time, the brothers in your lodge. And many people just stay at that level and do charity work and stuff for the lodge and events and, you know, talks and trips, whatever. But it also gives you the right to visit other lodges. If you go on holiday in Australia and fancy visiting a lodge in Australia, you can write them and say, I'm a member of such and such a lodge. Can I come and sit on one of your meetings or whatever? And that, you know, they'll be happy. And that can be nice. That can be a social opportunity to socialise and so on. But to really move across between the lodges a lot, then you have to take on a lot of Masonic responsibility, you know, administrative responsibility between the lodges to check on they're running things properly and their accounts are in order and all that kind of stuff. So it's a responsibility rather than the fact that, you know, can somebody get me a job in kind of Middlesbrough? I'm from Cornwall. Can you put me in there? You know, if you're really interested in the back scratching side of it, I would recommend that you go to a private school or an Oxbridge college or something like that rather than join the Freemasons. It's much more efficient.
Okay, so a couple of centuries ago, being a Mason might have been a bit more useful than today. I still hesitate to say goodbye to the networking idea, though. I'm quite hung up on it. So I have to ask someone who would definitely know if they benefited from it or not.
So my name's David. I'm 33. And yeah, I work in the film industry. I've been an actor for years and now I'm a producer and director. I still am acting as well. And that's the bulk of me.
You are a Freemason, aren't you? And I wonder if you can remember, before you became a Mason, when the first time was you ever heard about it, by any chance?
Oh, good question. I think I came across Freemasonry for the first time when I was like a teenager or something. Definitely through a film. You know, how it kind of pops up. And then I don't really remember it being anything in my life or continuously. I don't know anyone in my life personally that is a Mason, has been attached to it at all in any way, other than myself and now all the other Masons that I've met. But before that, no, nothing. It was just kind of what you hear, like, you know, through films, through social media as you get older, all of that.
And you kind of scratched already a bit about the conspiracies that kind of surround it, but I think there's also very much that idea or that image more than anything that it's a bunch of back scratching males and one helps the other out and you have a sweet deal here and you join and then suddenly you have access to this wonderful career. And maybe you're the perfect person to ask as an artist, because I think networking is a huge part of that, or one is always being told you need to network. So you basically joined apparently the ultimate network here, so you can probably give actual information how useful it turned out. If it's like that at all.
I wish it was super helpful for that. God, maybe it will be, I don't know. But there is not a focus for it to be that at all. Yeah. In fact, I'm pretty sure at some point in the process, especially when you're like applying, it's like, this is not a like business gaining networking thingy. You know, don't use it for that. If you're here using it for that, this is not the right thing for you. Because it really isn't that.
Next, David tells me the story of how he found his way to masonry. And in that moment, I wonder if it could even be something like fate. Maybe some people are just meant to become masons.
The decision maker was being on a film set as an actor, having a terrible time, taking a stroll one night, probably at 2 a.m. in the morning, by the side of a road, and there was this guy at the end, and we're in the middle of nowhere as well, and he was had a motorbike, he's having a lovely cup of tea under the stars, and I thought, for some reason I felt like I could trust this guy, you know, considering the circumstances. And we start having a chat, so I see some things on his motorbike, some symbols, and I'm like, are they Freemasonry symbols? And he says, yeah, why, are you interested? And then we just kind of have this conversation about it and about him and his life and what I'm doing, what he's doing, and we just have a lovely conversation. And then he sort of breaks the news to me that at that time, like Freemasonry was opening up, so anyone could apply, could join. And I thought, ah, okay, because I didn't know anyone who was a Freemason other than this guy. And he was like, but you know, if they need kind of like a recommendation still, but it's not like you need to really know anyone that's there, so you can still join. But yeah, so he kind of really inspired me to kind of just look into it, so I did, and then I joined. So I think at that time I was just having a really bad time, and what he was saying was, I just connected to that guy straight away, and it was like probably 2 a.m. and it was really dark in the middle of nowhere, this strange guy who's a lot older than me, and for some reason I just connected and we bonded, and we had a great conversation under the stars with a cup of tea.
It slowly starts to dawn on me that maybe there is no definitive answer to my question. I would need to conduct a massive field study to find patterns in people's reasonings for becoming a Mason. I also spoke to social scientists, anthropologists, and theologists during my journey. The conversations were beyond food for thought, but also have not given me the answer. As I've heard plenty from Masons over the last few months, it seems to be something different for everyone. What I'm by now sure about is that Freemasonry gives an awful lot to some of its members. It can have immense meaning in their life, even if you and I might not understand that straight away. And that meaning often goes even beyond death, which makes me wonder if, despite Freemasonry not being a religion, it all ends up being about faith anyway.
So I'm just walking home from a friend's house, and I took a shortcut through a graveyard. And then I was walking, and because clearly I'm a massive creep, I was like looking at the graveyard names. I don't know. And then suddenly I looked to my right, and there's this Masonic grave. So it's a normal grave, but the gravestone has the Masonic symbols on it. So you have the square and the compass. And that actually reminded me that I spoke to John Dickey about this and about people clearly caring very much about their Masonic being to the extent that they will have it in their gravestone. Yeah, so it was actually wild seeing it in real life. And a few metres after, I saw another one. So I saw two at Lambeth Cemetery just now. Just a little coincidence as I spoke to John Dickey beforehand.
So what do you think they have to offer? I mean, we covered a few things, teaching you how to speak and so on, and certain sense of camaraderie maybe. Is there anything else that you say people take from it or find in it?
Yeah, there's undoubtedly, I mean, people live out their Freemasonry in different ways and see different things in it. There is undoubtedly a spiritual side to it as well, a sort of, as I said, a kind of second order religious side, a sense of moral being morally uplifted, taking yourself seriously as an ethical being. And that spiritual side of Freemasonry, for me, centres on death. Yeah? Death is everywhere in Masonic symbolism. Skulls, body bags, coffins, you name it, all over the place. And you, as I said, you go through a kind of symbolic death and resurrection in the most important of the three basic ceremonies of Freemasonry. Why is that? Well, you know, the philosopher Bertrand Russell famously said that, you know, the core business of all religions is addressing the fear of death. It's something that faces us all, and we've got to come to terms with it in one way or another. And I think Freemasonry, while not being a religion, does do that core work of religion by making people, defining that fellowship as, you know, we together as brothers, we can contemplate death and give it an ethical meaning, give it a shape, give it a story as part of our lives, and, you know, think about it in that way. And I think a lot of people find that very powerful. You know, it's, there are not many organizations or fellowships where you will find people with the symbol of that organization on their gravestone, and you will see Masonic gravestones all over the place. You go to a cemetery or whatever, you will see people who've put the Masonic, the square and compass on their gravestone.
For Nicholas, the potential recruit we heard from earlier, faith plays a vital part in his decision on whether to become a Mason or not. I checked in with him a couple of weeks after the event.
Back to the event, after the speakers, there was a little tour around the building that we both did, and that's when we got to speak. And I believe I asked you whether you were going to join. Do you remember what you said to me?
I can't. I remember at the time I was very keen. What did I say? I can't remember exactly.
I believe the word definitely fell.
I knew it was going to be definitely. I love the word definitely. Yeah, I was very keen at the end of that tour because it did just seem like, you know, before I arrived, there was a few things I was worried it might be. I was worried it would maybe be really religious. I was worried it would be really networky. And I can't remember, but it turned out to be very much not either of those things. And at the time, those were my big counters. And it is somewhat religious. But it very much seemed like a place you go to do charitable things for other people, as opposed to lots of people calling themselves entrepreneurs trying to get one up, you know, which is what I was worried about. I did say definitely, but I'd say it was more that definitely wanted to give it a go. I wanted to see what it was about. I wasn't quite fully sold on the idea at the time.
And then,
or at least,
I think I spoke to you about 2 weeks after. Does that feel right? Something like that.
Yeah.
And then you moved a bit away from definitely to maybe. do you want to tell me a bit about that process that you went through?
Yeah, so, I'm glad you asked that because, so the reason I didn't join, there's actually two reasons why I was thinking against it and, in my sense, would procrastinate it a bit longer and maybe leave it a year or two to see where I am and not do it quite so immediately. So I'm not saying I'm not doing it, but there are two reasons against it. One was that, one was because of religion, and that my sister and my uncle's born-again religion means that they're quite upset with it. But the other was, ironically, that I wasn't religious enough. And I feel that I'm quite the opposite of those family members in that I'd rather sometimes struggle to see a greater power or a belief. I'm quite critically minded like that. And it seems when you went there, you kind of had to believe in a greater power. And I know it said before I went, it said you have to believe in a greater power. But then when I got there, it kind of, no, you really do have to believe in a greater power. That's what it's all about. And it's not necessarily a religion in and of itself, but it kind of builds on your religion. And if you don't have one, then it's very hard to build on nothing. And I'm certainly not at a place in my life where I'd go, I believe in a greater power. So it was ironic that on one hand, too religious, and on the other hand, not religious enough. It's sort of what acts against me there. And yeah, I think the first reason is a little frustrating because it's not even my religion that's against it, but I wouldn't want to put the cost of any family relations at something like that.
And joining and keeping it to yourself wouldn't be an option for you?
Yeah, I mean, I know it's all about secrets, but I just feel a little bit off, you know. And as much as we may have different beliefs, I do feel really quite close to my family. I feel like that would drive almost... the reason I would be joining it is to feel like I'm doing something good and to feel a bit of camaraderie. But I feel like that is not worth it for the cost that it might bring, because I can get that same thing elsewhere. And it's a pity because it does really intrigue me. And I feel like it would be a really great place to find some friends and to feel good. But just it carries quite a risk versus reward, as it were. Not to look at it so transactionally, but...
So to pin you down on it again, but uh-oh. what's your kind of status quo right now? Is it no or future or maybe or not sure yet?
I think I'm putting it back into hibernation again, like I did at the start of university. So it's not a hard no. It's a definite something that interests me. But at the same time, I'm just not in the right point in my beliefs.
When I speak to Nicholas, I admire his reflectiveness. Something me and my friends often don't have, and definitely didn't have at the age of 24. I can see how Freemasonry is a good place for people who ask themselves questions other people their age might not. Do I find it all a bit quirky? 100%! Does that matter? No. Everyone I spoke to really enjoys being a Mason and lives by a value system I could only dream of. My big surprise was the openness and willingness they had when it came to talking to me. I never had the feeling that there was a question I couldn't ask. Whether I got an answer? Well, let's say some things are just meant to be secret. Young people join for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes it's family ties, sometimes it's camaraderie, sometimes coincidence or even fate. And despite me having doubts about some things, like for example the segregation, I believe that there is one thing that is undoubtedly true. Freemasonry offers a third space for young men. With the rapid decrease of spaces away from work and home, I believe that that is something deeply positive. Freemasonry seems to, at least in this part, provide something we as a society are beginning to lose.